The rules about technology and sleep used to be fairly straightforward. Don't mix them. If you want to get a good night's sleep, keep away from those devices. But at this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, where more than 3,800 companies were showcasing their new products, it appears that the rules might now be changing, or at least they're getting more complicated. Could technology even help you sleep better? To find out more, I'm joined now by Dr. David Cunnington, who is a specialist sleep physician. Good morning to you, David.
Hello.
So what do you make of this? I mean, why are the rules suddenly changing? I thought technology was bad for you and didn't help you sleep.
Well, like most things in life, we can't be sort of black and white. There is a shades of grey. So technology potentially has some really helpful things to do with sleep in terms of measuring sleep and then giving us insights into our sleep that might help us change our behaviour or our approach to sleep and therefore improve sleep.
So talk us about some of these developments. What are these new areas where technology is actually measuring sleep?
So over the last few years, people have had smartphones, and about 3 years ago there were some smartphone apps where you'd put your smartphone under your pillow and it might sense movement and correlate that to a particular type of sleep, lighter sleep versus deeper sleep. And then 1 or 2 years ago it evolved more into wearables, so things people still use, like devices like a Fitbit that might fit on your wrist. And then would attach to your smartphone and, based on your movement, give you an idea about whether you're awake or asleep and what type of sleep you're in. That technology is just continuing to evolve, and it's some sort of device. There's a ring that was at this year's CES. There's some things that go under the mattress that sense your chest movement or body movement, and they then go to your smartphone and will tell you whether you've been awake or asleep. They're not perfect, but they're not bad either. And they can give really nice insights into how much people are sleeping. The bit where the technology will continue to evolve over the next few years is getting better about the different subtypes of sleep, or getting a better idea about sleep quality. The technology is not quite there yet for that.
So at the moment it's basically measuring how we sleep, not necessarily the quality of the sleep. But David, unless you're a specialist sleep physician like yourself, what would you do with this data?
This is the problem. So the technology such that we can design these devices to measure different variables about sleep. But that's where it falls down at the moment. It's then presented on the smartphone with some fancy-looking graph and gives you a sleep score and some tips on how to improve your score. That's really the part that needs to evolve a lot more.
Yeah, that all looks good, but if it makes no sense to the average user, what's the point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's sort of dressed up to be more than what it is and promises more than what it's ever been proven to deliver.
Yeah.
So that's our challenge in the sleep field over the next few years, is to take some of these emerging technologies, actually assess them, measure them, see what it is they're actually measuring, and then translate that into usable information and usable messages that people can understand, and then use that to put in place some practical strategies.
So while this technology is still being developed, in the meantime, does that rule still apply of sort of keep away from all your devices before you go to sleep?
Sort of think of it as that we use the device for multiple things. So if you're using the device as I'm going to be reading, I'm going to be actively engaged, I'm going to be, you know, the FOMO, fear of not missing out, I've got to be up to date with absolutely everything, that's not good for sleep. But if the device is, it's attached to some wearable and it's actually giving a little bit of insight into what's happening to sleep, then that may be a positive for sleep. So it's thinking of how you're using your device. It's also important not to, if we are measuring sleep, not to get too obsessed about it, because people can get a bit caught up in the, well, last night I only got 4 hours, but tonight I got 7, and what's that mean, and what else is going on?
Oh, you are so talking to the wrong person. When I'm not doing this, I work on The Breakfast Show, and my entire team were all obsessed with sleep. That is literally the topic of conversation. I don't know how to not be obsessed with it.
Right, so that's the tricky balance, is almost as humans, we've got to just trust that our bodies will take the sleep it needs if we provide the appropriate opportunity. But, you know, we want to be actively managing it. We want to be acing it. We want to be, you know, top of our game. So we can actually put a bit too much pressure on ourselves in terms of sleep.
I'm talking to Dr. David Cunnington, who is a specialist sleep physician, and we're talking about the role of technology and sleep. What exactly is it about those devices that impact our sleep? I mean, is it the screen? Is it the light? Because, you know, sometimes you're going to bed and you're reading on your Kindle. Is that a bad thing as well, even though you're slowly winding down?
So there are two components to it. There's the component of what we're doing on the device, and then there is the component of light that may be emitted by the device. So a lot of data in recent years showing that light from devices in a blue-green wavelength can have a major impact on preventing the brain from switching off and making it harder to get to sleep. So devices like a Kindle aren't backlit, so they don't have that type of problem, whereas some of the other tablets or smartphones are backlit. The operating systems now come with settings where you can set a time, and at a particular time, it'll change the colour of the screen to a more warm or neutral in terms of sleep colour, so that it doesn't impact on sleep. So they're a really good function to be able to switch on.
So for people who are listening and they do lie in bed at night and they're reading on a device, whether it's a Kindle or you know their iPad or something like that, how long should they stop using that device before they want to fall asleep? Is there a rule about that?
Unfortunately, we haven't got the good data to aid us in that regard. So, and again, it's a bit of a double-edged sword. So if people are, you know, got that thinking of, I can't use my device, I've got to put it down, and then are lying in bed and there's this in that void, they're getting that circular thinking and getting anxious about sleep, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And arguably a device in that setting could distract them from getting anxious about the fact that they're not sleeping.
So it's not really just about the device, it's also, like you keep saying, it's about what you do on the device that can really have an impact on your sleep. So what type of technological advances do you hope to see in this area to help you as a sleep physician better measure people's sleep and you know, get some of those answers?
So one of the beauties of devices at home to measure sleep is that we get longitudinal data. And by that I mean we get night after night after night after night, and the ability to compare what happens over weeks and months. You know, in my role as a sleep physician, I'll put someone through a sleep study, and that gives me a lot of data, but on one night in an artificial environment. And I see that as then sort of data at home over time as being really complementary to what I would normally do. So for us being able to integrate that longer-term data at home that allows us to look at trends and how things change across time, and more intensive data that gets a really accurate look at sleep quality, which is something we may do in a sleep laboratory or a sleep study setting.
Are there any particular apps that you are aware of that people, you know, who might be looking to measure their own sleep, or that people, you know, who might be able to use them to help them get a better night's sleep?
Yeah, it's still a bit that's the loop hasn't been closed. So in terms of measurement, we quite like one of the devices called a Jawbone. That particular brand of devices seems to do well in terms of measuring sleep length. But the bit of the loop that hasn't been closed is then translating that into, okay, what do you do with that? How do you interpret that? So that's still where there's a lot of work to be done. And in essence, that's a lot of what I do day to day. People come and see me and they bring their smartphone and their printouts from their devices and say, look, what's this mean for me? How can I use this information to help myself to sleep better?
I'm talking to Dr. David Cunnington. He's a specialist sleep physician. Before I spoke to you, I was talking to one of the producers, and as I said, we're all obsessed with sleep on this program, and he said that he uses this app which measures whether he's in REM sleep or a different type of sleep, and it wakes him up at the right time when it's the, you know, but he's convinced that he's getting less sleep as a result of it. What do you make of all these type of apps out there?
Yeah, so that's a nice example of a stretch too far.
Yeah.
It's the app promising more than what it's capable of delivering. All the theory's nice. You know, when we come up to the end of a sleep cycle, we will be a little bit more restless, and in theory then we could detect some more movement, and an app may say, right, you're in lighter sleep, let's wake you up. But the implementation's not quite there yet. And so often people find exactly what your producer described. It's sort of waking them earlier than they expect, and it's just not quite working right.
Yeah, so it's not all in his head.
We've still got a ways to go in terms of the implementation.
Now, David, before I let you go, it is the new year. So what can people who are listening to this do this year to enjoy better sleep throughout the year?
So probably two things. One thing is not for people who are obsessed about sleep, it's almost for the opposite, people who are disrespectful of sleep. Sleep when you're dead, I'm too busy to sleep. So for those people, it's actually prioritising sleep. Seeing sleep as an important part of maintaining good health, so ensuring that there is adequate opportunity for sleep. And then the other thing is for the other group of people who are obsessed about sleep and almost overthinking sleep, is to just cultivate a bit of an ambivalence about sleep and just a trust in your own body that as long as I provide an adequate opportunity for sleep, my body will take the sleep that it needs. I don't need to be managing it, controlling it, trying to, you know, get too involved in it, because that can often just feed a sleep-related anxiety and make sleep problems worse.
That is some golden advice right there. Just let go. Let go of that obsession. But David, thank you so much for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
I'm going to go take a nap right now. That was Dr. David Cunnington, specialist sleep physician. And you can find out more at his website. That's www.sleephub.com.au.